The following podcast has been made possible by the generous members of our Patreons. So if you like our podcast, you want to join in and contribute and find mountains of other content while you're there, join in at patreon.com/IanBaldsworth and patreon.com/burialsandbeyond. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Loopholes episode 17, your weekly discussion podcast on all things esoterotic. I am Ian Bolesworth. Hello.
And I'm Kate Cheryl. Hello.
The doctor, the good doctor is in the house, who, you probably don't know this, but there has been mass illness at Loopholes Towers. Been very, very poorly. Both of us have. But that originated that one of us, might have been the goth, but one of us, went to a Cure concert and then came and recorded Loopholes. And I'm not saying that goths are particularly non-resilient to illness or anything like that. You know, the paleness. I don't want to get into stereotypes and all that sort of thing. We know that I don't do that about goths. I'm trying to understand. Do you know what? As we all are.
Yeah.
In the world, we're all trying to understand the goths. But what we have learnt is that a load of goths at a Cure concert are riddled with illness, riddled with diseases, which they then bring back into the, let's call it, the normal world.
Look, I wore my mask, as I always do.
Yeah.
It wasn't intentional.
You brought illness into Loopholes Towers.
Look, if
anyone... Did you or not? But did you or not?
If I will admit, if anyone was going to risk their health to see Robert Smith flounce around for 3.5 hours, it will be me.
And do you know what? I've got no problem with that. What I do have a problem with is you then spreading the disease to other people who wouldn't risk their lives to go and see Robert Smith flounce about unless it was in a swimming pool.
Anyway,
look, we've got a crack on. We've got a load of comments from the last episode. So we'll do the feedback straight away. The last episode, of course, was about sex magic. Simon Oram said, this is on my Patreon, said, tell me there is a Red Hot Chili Peppers reference. There wasn't, was there, at any point about sex magic? Kevin Moore, I used to watch Most Haunted. We had a long discussion about Most Haunted, as you recall, as I found it silly fun until I worked those medium shows like Derek Acura, then couldn't watch the show at all when I realised they weren't playing up for the cameras. They are like that in real life. Derek walked onto stage before the show. I asked him if he was happy with the lighting state and how it was focused into the auditorium. Instead of asking the cameraman who was in the wings, he turned up stage and asked Sam. So Sam was
his spirit guide.
I didn't want to climb down until he was off stage. I really think he believed he could speak to Sam. Some of the others were just obvious charlatans. I just think Derek was mentally ill, is what Kevin says. Now, I have thoughts on this.
Mm-hmm.
If you are operating a fraudulent personality, is what I'm going to say.
Yes.
So, you know what I mean? Fraudulent as in it's not as it seems to be.
Yeah, it's like a fabricated.
Yeah, but you're maintaining it's real.
Yes.
For example, here's an example. So, Derren Brown.
Mm-hmm.
When Derren Brown turns up at the theatre, he can't take the theatre staff into his trust. And Derren Brown, by the way, we know for definite, it's trickery. It's stage magic.
Yeah.
But he's not claiming that he's actually doing magical things.
No.
But he can't take the theatre staff into his trust and tell them the secrets of what he's doing.
No.
Just because Derek Acura was speaking to Kevin and doing his little party piece speaking to his spirit guide in front of Kevin doesn't mean that Derek Acura actually believed he was speaking to a spirit guide. He just has to keep up the act for everyone.
Yeah, I don't necessarily believe that all kind of, let's say, performance psychics, or let's say auditorium psychics. Mm. That's a new banner now.
Okay.
Trademark Loopholes.
Right.
We're
racking up these trademarks.
We really are. It's going to cost us a few quid.
We need to get a TM put on the end of dinner, ladies. And can I just say on that subject, I love that people are using the phrase dinner ladies.
I know, it's brilliant.
In conversation. I love that. Because that was just me one day searching for a way to describe these people. And I said, they're like dinner ladies.
But you nailed it. That is...
And now everyone's referring to them as dinner ladies. I love that. Go on, apologies. Go on, what are you going to say?
But no, auditorium psychics.
Yes.
So people that are still touring today in regional auditoriums, like, most of them will pass through, say, like, Grimsby.
I mean, some of them won't have an auditorium. Some will just be art centres.
Well, yeah.
Studio. The studio space psychics.
But all that crowd.
And I say that as someone who was well used to studio spaces when I taught.
I don't want to brag, but I've racked up quite a few WI church halls in
well
my
done.
Time.
Well done, congratulations.
Thank you. But I think a lot of these people that trade under having psychic powers or any kind of mystical power or ability to contact the dead, not all of them arrive thinking, right, I have to keep all the staff on board. They have to feel I'm legitimate.
Right.
Because I've certainly heard plenty of like anecdotal information from people I know who have, again, like worked in theatres and things and have had first-hand experiences with these people who will arrive, see all the staff as quite functional, like they are staff, it doesn't matter what I'm doing.
Right.
They have a job to do, I don't have to impress them because I've got the money in my contract.
But Akora was high level in terms of how well known he was and how,
yeah,
you know, if you, I guess if you asked 100 people name a psychic, a lot
in the UK,
okay, yeah, a lot would say Derek Akora.
Yes, of our generation, give or take.
Yeah,
before that it would be people like Doris Stokes, kind of the early auditorium psychics. But I think in recent years, certainly when there has been kind of controversies about mediums' behaviours and how they buy into their own act when on tour.
Right.
The way they interact with the staff, with the space, with the audience.
Yeah.
When those sort of stories hit the headlines, it's usually because someone else in the touring party, let's say a spouse.
Right.
I don't want to cite exact stories because I...
They are litigious.
I don't... They're very litigious. Yeah. I really don't fancy going down
Which
that
always
route.
Amazes me.
Yeah.
Because the lion...
But there have been some very high-profile instances where the spouse a renowned auditorium psychic is verbally or physically abusive or gets into altercations
with
the staff or with the audience. And so that then reflects on the act as a whole, and kind of the circumstances of those altercations don't necessarily mirror how Derek was. They would be more like, we are here to do a performance, do your job.
Do you think, again, this is another little dark side to all this, isn't it? That do you think, and I'm going to relate it to Jimmy Savile, do you think part of the keeping the secret of the fraud is striking fear into people? So do you think that's why they're certainly, in some cases, they go through with being litigious, but I would imagine in most cases it's a threat of legal action that keeps people quiet, which is how Savile operated. And I know that the crimes are very different here.
Oh, yeah, far more severe.
The tactic, I guess, of silencing people and of keeping people from giving away your secrets to wield legality.
Yeah.
I mean, it's much broader than that anyway. A lot of people wield legality.
Yeah, so certainly people who work in the fields of performance esotericism.
But in entertainment, full stop.
Oh,
of people. There's plenty of, like, shock jocks or what have you are constantly threatening to sue people.
Yeah.
Never do. But that threat
has
a good enough hit rate to get rid of folk.
Yeah, but I think also it's because that's coming from a place where that individual has already been quite vocal about their success and wealth. And that in itself, without any proof of your success and wealth, can be adequate enough to scare people into submission, or not even wealth, but people who believe that they have control over a social group or a certain narrative or something like that, can wield a similar sort of power, getting people around them to hold secrets or hold information pertaining to, you know, nefarious acts under the threat of this will be revealed. I control the narrative because I have control over whether it be finances, whether it be people, whether it be, you know, promotional material.
Yeah.
I think that can be applied across the board, not just to psychics, but to social situations, to business situations. A lot of it comes from perceived control, the promotion of where you sit yourself in the hierarchy.
I think I'm just contending that Derek Akora was mentally ill and thought he was speaking to the ghosts. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, I don't know. I don't know that I buy that. I mean, I can't speak for his real life about his mental health or anything like that. But I think in regards to the speaking to the ghosts, I'm relatively confident he knew he wasn't that every time he spoke to Sam, he knew exactly what he was doing. It was showmanship. And I've seen enough footage of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that he had taken into his inner circle,
mm-hmm.
he had a great laugh with about this sort of stuff, really.
Yes, you know? Okay.
Benji Barnes, it's interesting that you mentioned the return of puritanical values around sex. There's a real uptake of this in the queer online community recently from the Puritans, which seem to be in direct opposition to the fact that a lot of us are just getting to the point where we feel able to relate to sex and sexuality on our own terms. It's particularly strange when the call that's setting the community back is coming from within the house. Great episode as always. Thank you, Benji. Mm. Thus, that it has always been. The snake eats itself, blah, 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 blah. You know, that's not exclusive to sexuality, gender, anything. That's everything.
Yeah.
It always comes from within. Always.
Yes, yeah. Although I quite like the word puritan. I've never heard that before.
Oh, it's a... I think it's a water filter. I think it is that.
Right, okay.
I don't know. I'm an old man. Remember that I'm an old man.
Well, I'm terribly sorry that water filtration systems are destroying the queer community.
I don't know what these youngsters are all getting up to.
Yeah.
This was about the... When I was speaking about... Was it Twilight that I was speaking about?
It was kind of from Twilight and the sex magic chat.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. You're right. It is confusing how this generation, you know, the young whippersnappers, aren't just out rotting in fields all the time and shoving it in people's faces.
Well, maybe they are, like, you know, it's not, I don't know, like, your perception of the world, this is one of the hugest problems anyway, this is a whole other discussion, but one of the hugest problems is if your perception of the world and reality is just social media, then you're looking...
Oh, it's so skewed.
You're looking through a very small window, that doesn't mean, it doesn't follow that what you see on any of the major social media platforms is actually what the world is.
Mm.
Like, when I spoke about puritanical stuff and puritanical attitudes, and I know it's the wrong word, but it's the closest word I can get to it, is that was coming, I guess, from first-hand experience, from seeing in the industry that I used to work in, the comedy industry, that I was noticing a generation coming through who seemed to be quite pompous, maybe, about sex and quite sort of judgmental. I don't mean about me personally. I mean just generally.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a posh thing or not. I don't know what it was, but there was certainly some sort of looking down their noses at people who you would have considered in the 60s and 70s to have been completely sexually liberated and yada, yada, yada. You've got an entire generation coming through at the moment who have that going on too. The expression of sexuality at the moment is potent, absolutely potent.
Yes.
But, as Benji says, it divides a community because there are some who are really puritanical and there are others that are just absolute slags. There are. And I don't say that in a judgmental way at all. You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are. Yeah, they are two extremes.
I suppose, yeah, absolutely. I think certainly a lot of sexualities today are being described as kind of as broad as possible.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, to then have on the other side people trying to box their sexuality and their sexual proclivities back up kind of seems, like I say, counterproductive, that the queer community is being damaged from the inside out. A friend of mine, years ago, we were discussing kind of the... Because she's from Poland and she's gay, and the experiences that she had coming out and being a gay woman in, I think it was a predominantly Catholic country.
Right.
She said it far more eloquently than I ever could. As soon as she started having, let's say inverted commas, queer sex, everything within that was already subversive.
Right, okay.
So nothing was taboo because she felt like she'd already broken down that boundary by not having heterosexual sex.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, to hear that other youngsters are trying to like enforce a kind of purity culture into a place where purity culture in the standard kind of Christian deep South American way would not be welcome. It is very interesting, quite concerning.
Well, I think it's I don't know. It's a big discussion, isn't it? But I think it probably at its root has something to do with people wishing to feel that their voice is important. So wishing
absolutely.
To feel, you know, that they are a spokesperson.
Yeah.
For either a movement or for a generation, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Now, none of us can dictate what any individual feels about this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every individual feels something. You might be in line with the trend, but you certainly are an individual yourself.
Yeah.
But if the one who has the loudest voice within a movement, shall we say, is puritanical and has followers, this is where social media comes into play, and has followers who will just agree with everything they say, before you know it, you have a puritanical stream to an entire, I guess, identity, you know, whatever it is, whatever the right word is to describe it. But if the loudest voice is always agreed with, then you will have that within it. I guess, just, you know, crack on. And again, must emphasise, I wasn't saying slag in a... No, I wasn't saying it in a bad way.
Like, no.
I really wasn't.
No, no, of course not, no.
I'd be a rank hypocrite if I did.
Let your slag flag wave high and free.
Yeah.
But there was some interesting... comments as well about misogyny and purity that we just dipped into with references to Twilight.
Yeah, okay.
The amount of times we've mentioned Twilight, we could do an entire podcast special on that, but we won't.
I hope you enjoy doing it when you do it.
Exactly, but I will be doing this special with Annette and Abby.
Right, okay.
Who commented some really fantastic things about kind of how Twilight, while it's enjoyable, is a bit of fluff genre fiction, is also misogynistic, and it pushes marriages so hard because of Stephanie Meyer's Mormon background.
Right.
And then there's obviously the immediate punishment of sex being lethal pregnancy to a very strange CGI baby.
Don't know anything about this.
But I think it kind of ties in that. It's pushing kind of pseudo-supernatural framework with this idea that sex within marriage and like functional sex is the only appropriate way to go about it. But also, you know, patriarchal narratives are kind of inherent in genre literature and literature for young women.
Right.
You know, right back to, you know, 19th century gothic fiction where it's damsels in distress waiting for a lovely young man with a substantial fortune to come and rescue them.
Yeah.
So Annette says, you know, shouldn't we be empowering girls rather than reinforcing the need to be submissive to men? Of course, absolutely. But again, I think with these things... with any type of media, especially, you know, esoterotic media, because so much of it's self-produced, you've always got to think about the intent and the agenda of the creator. I think using Twilight as an example of that is a kind of good point that is applicable to many different fields.
Right.
So Annette says that if she'd read them as a girl, she would have enjoyed them and could appreciate that. But as a woman, she's appalled by Bella's need to follow and be controlled by shiny, sparkly vampire Edward. So she's not sure that criticism of it is an attack on teenage girls so much as an indictment of the patriarchal narrative.
Right, okay, so this is something I spoke about in the last episode. The instance I was talking about was...
yeah.
It was absolutely a judgment on the story because teenage girls like it. It was definitively that. There was no grey area in it at all. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that used a few times. So I'm not saying that there aren't people criticising it for the reasons that Annette listed. Mm. I'm saying in the instances, my experience of it, never seen Twilight, almost certainly never will. It's not for me. It's for teenage girls. But I'm not going to say, and because it's for teenage girls, it is rubbish.
Yes.
And that's what I had heard other men saying about that franchise, and that's the bit I balked at. I didn't like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the Greg sausage roll debate, the vegan sausage roll.
That's different.
If you're a meat eater, it's not for you. Don't have it.
Yeah, no, no.
Other people love it.
But and it's different though, because they shouldn't. They shouldn't. They can make them and they can sell them. That's fine.
Yeah.
The hill I will die on. Can't call it a sausage roll. That's all I'm saying. You just can't call it a sausage roll.
Okay, well, sausage is the shape, not the contents. And any more comments on your Patreon?
Well, Annette and Abby, you're showing off about your podcast, you can do with them, also left comments on my Patreon as well. So I might do a podcast with them. Annette said, Most Haunted was heavily influenced by Ghostwatch. Could we speak about Most Haunted so much?
Mm.
Which terrified me when it aired. Never seen it. Still never seen it.
We need to sort that out.
But I've not seen it out of... I'm determined to not see it.
I think you'd like it.
I think I know... perhaps too much about it, maybe?
I think it serves a rewatch.
Annette also said that she went on a ghost train when she was about 11 years old and had to psych herself up to go onto the ghost train, that it really frightened her, and the entire ride of the ghost train, she had her eyes shut and didn't see any of it. And she said, it was only when I heard people laughing and realised the ride was over and I was back outside. I relate to that, though.
Yeah,
you know, for all my love and passion about ghost trains, as a child, it was a fear to overcome.
Yeah, same.
Terrified of going into them.
Sophie cleverly also said online that she was terrified of the Haunted Mansion when she was little.
Okay.
But now, much like you, she's come to be kind of obsessed with it.
See, I wasn't terrified of the Haunted Mansion. I was more disappointed because I thought I was in the wrong ride.
Right.
Because I'd seen it on the British TV programme that I'd seen clips of it on.
Mm-hmm.
My dad won the pools. We got to go to Disney World. I was seven. And the beginning of the Haunted Mansion, you are walking for a little bit and you go into a stretching room. It's a little gallery thing. And I remember vividly being in there and thinking, this is the wrong ride.
Yeah.
So all I recall about that back then was just being frustrated. So I wasn't scared of it at all. I was quite excited to see see-through ghosts.
Yes,
little Pepper's ghost stuff that they were using in there. But the ones that came around with Silcox Fair, at St. Alan's show and all that sort of thing, absolutely terrifying. And the worst thing that could happen, the absolute worst thing that could happen in a ghost train to me, is if they had someone in there dressed up. So if you had someone with a sheet over them as a ghost, or if when you're going around in the dark bit, someone grabbed hold of your head, scratched your head. That saw me off.
Yeah.
Saw me off completely. In fact, I think it probably still would to this day.
Yes.
And I think I would actually get out of the car, which I've been known to do. And I think I would get out of the car actually hunt them down.
Let's not talk about how many places you've been banned from.
Nowadays, if I go on a ghost train again in the UK, I am going to go with night vision goggles. I'm going to see, and if I see a human being walking about, interfering with people, they may have a motive, I don't know, I don't even want to discuss that sort of thing, but if they did, I would knock them spark out, and I'm not a violent person. And Abby said on mine, is it weird I sometimes put on Most Haunted to go to sleep? Yes.
Yeah, if constant screams of Yvette Fielding help you go to sleep.
That's what
then.
She says. Although Yvette Fielding screaming will wake me up sometimes. I've got bespoke sounds that are actually for that to help you go to sleep, nature sounds and things. And I will like black mark some of them if there's a bird squawking in it or something that wakes me up. So why you would choose something that you know full well is going to have screams in it to go to sleep? But you know,
you do you.
Horses for courses, mate. Greg Shepherd said, Kate discussing sexism and sexist gatekeeping in the paranormal. I always thought the primary consumers of at least ghosts, medium psychics and the like were women, whereas Bigfoot bothering and UFO hunting seems to be far more targeted at a male audience. Just basically that the most popular coverage of the paranormal seems to be in sections of the media primarily aimed at women, and your hunting and all that is primarily targeted at a male audience. If this is the case, this is what Greg says, would be far from the first thing primarily consumed by women, but where men have a disproportionate representation among the talent and sexist attitudes still linger, but I realise this is an assumption. What are the demographics of people into ghosts and other forms of the paranormal?
Well, I don't have numbers.
Okay.
But I don't think he's far off, really.
Right, okay.
I do think there is disproportionate representation of ghost botherers on TV and film and things like that.
But when you're analysing something like that, you've got to keep in mind that just because media targets it broadly, women or men, again, speaking broadly, it, just because they do that, doesn't mean they've got it right. Doesn't mean they're the right people to target in terms of that. Well, that's the group that like it.
Yeah.
They could be quite stereotypical views of that. I don't know.
Yeah,
I keep away from these people.
I don't think that any kind of esoterotic media, so we're talking TV, film, magazines, I'd say they're kind of the three primary things.
Right.
Certainly with ghost hunting on TV, I think it's definitely representation is skewed more towards kind of hyper-masculine investigators, whereas in my experience, in reality, personally, a lot of my ghost hunting friends are predominantly female, whereas I think really in reality it's probably 50-50.
Right, okay.
There's far more diversity in kind of real-life ghost hunting than on telly. But certainly, with Bigfoot bothering and UFO hunting, I think it's the outdoorsy pursuits.
Okay.
So things that require sensible footwear and a puffer jacket are aimed more towards men.
Right.
Whereas the most accessible spooky magazines like Women's Weeklies in the UK are, by definition, kind of aimed towards women. They'll have unrelated pictures of women on the cover and then spooky stories surrounding them.
I mean, be specific though. Educationally subnormal women, like make it very clear. I don't want other women to go, hang on a minute. That's not aimed at me, that.
Look, I've got a nice little stash.
You have, but you don't read them thinking it's the greatest literature of all time, do you?
God,
you know, you read them, ironically, kind of.
They are dropping like flies now. There's not half as many as there used to be.
There's
only one now and it's monthly.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's all right, it's saving me a few quid.
Here's another comment that was sent privately. Andy Walker, because I've been doing another thing on Patreon, there have been a lot of comments, so Andy didn't want to drop this comment into that because it was thematically quite different. But Andy Walker said he'd identified his own loopholes in beliefs. And he said, when Mum died, I really struggled with the idea that I wanted there to be a happy afterlife for her. Her actual life wasn't great and she deserved far better. I'd been atheist since my teens, but all of a sudden I was wanting a heaven for her and my old pets, as they'd given nothing but love and loyalty. It's 10 years this year since she died, and I still haven't been able to square this. Would that automatically mean believing in a God? How could I accept an afterlife existing but not miracles? Can you pick and choose? Feel free to edit as you see fit. Thanks for your time. I've not edited that at all, so that's the full comment. I might be the wrong person to ask on this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because I have quite rigid
yes
beliefs on death and the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had an ongoing confusion about why people... I mean, I appreciate in this situation, Andy's talking about what he would want for someone else.
Yes.
So yeah. I understand that. Putting that momentarily and respectfully to one side,
mm-hmm.
I have always been confused by people's need to think that they carry on existing in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought about it a lot, and not about myself, but about other people. Why do they? Is it an egotistical thing? Is it? I mean, at one point I thought it was like a potentially narcissistic trait, that to think that it was like ridiculous to think of them not existing anymore.
Yeah,
that's where it came from. That they couldn't even get their head around not existing.
Yeah, I don't think it's that at all. I would say that it's kind of just an inherent part of the human consciousness, of the human ego, that, to quote the great Damien Hirst, the artist,
right.
His Shark in a Tank.
Yeah.
The actual title of that is The Physical Impossibility of Death in the Mind of Someone Living. And so I think, again, it ties into our inability to comprehend nothing.
Well, there's nothing to comprehend. It's dead easy. It's dead easy to comprehend nothing because there's nothing to comprehend. You don't have to think of anything.
I think we're going to keep coming at different angles on this.
You don't have to sit there going, well, what? Will it just be black? Will I just see black? It's like, no, you won't see anything.
But exactly.
You won't exist. Well, how will I know? No, you will no
but
longer
exactly.
exist.
Exactly. You can't actually comprehend not being there.
Yeah, so relating this to Andy,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not instructing Andy, I'm saying my dad's away now. Now, my dad also had a rotten time in mm-hmm. his final years, last 10 years of his life, certainly.
Yeah.
Rotten time from a health point of view, this
yes.
is. Really awful operations, traumatic stuff, really traumatic stuff. And when my dad was away,
mm-hmm.
my attitude very much was one of, that is enough now.
Yeah.
Now, that was enough for me when he was away. That was mm-hmm. it, that he was no longer in pain, that he was mm-hmm. no longer struggling with the things he'd been struggling with, that he no longer had another operation on the horizon, that that he wasn't going through all that again, that had stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So the story had finished and stopped, and that was enough for me, that my dad was no longer going through that pain or discomfort, whatever it was. So that's how I view it.
Yeah.
Is that I don't need it to be Andy's now he's on a cloud.
Oh, I don't think it's either I don't think it's either or. I think you can find solace in that person has been released from suffering, or they finally got some respite. But I also think you can have that and then have your nothing.
Yeah.
But you can also have that and then believe that maybe they'll have a second throw of the dice. You know, that they'll
be reincarnated.
Well, no, in heaven.
With all the risk inherent with that. Because loads of people have just a perfectly normal life that's fine and never any pain. Like, reincarnation would be an awful thing to wish on someone. Do you know what? You know that game you just played? You're playing it again. Yeah. Imagine someone saying that to you at the end of Monopoly. You'd be like, I'm not.
No, but I'm also now distracted because I have played Monopoly with you and I'll pay good money never to do that again.
I just cheat.
You do.
Yeah.
You're a horrible boy.
It's meant to be representative of life. People steal money in life.
Yeah.
That happens.
Yeah.
Not me, but I do in that game.
Yeah. Horrible experience.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I got my respite from that by shouting at you and leaving.
I'm dead good though. I'm really, really good at it. I'm really good at distracting,
Oh, you're good at distracting.
What I will do, so just as a little hint for you, should we ever play Monopoly ever again? Little hint, I will accuse you of stealing.
Oh,
I think the kids call it gaslighting.
Yeah, it's Muppets Monopoly.
I will accuse you of stealing. And whilst you're flustered about that, I will be taking money.
Yeah. I'll be watching those dice like a hawk.
Hey, life's cruel. Life's cruel, mate.
But I think taking the conversation back to the afterlife, I think you can pick and choose to an extent. Plenty of people have spiritual beliefs that don't rely on a singular benevolent or controlling deity. And I think a lot of relief can come from that, from holding those beliefs and thinking that people who maybe didn't have the best time in life will then not only be released from those binds, but will be at peace and conscious of it. But again, that all depends on the beliefs of the individual. But I certainly think you can find ways within your own belief system, within your own spiritualities, to be at peace with someone's kind of unfair and disproportionately pained life.
Yeah, maybe it's just how I'm wired, but I just consider it that it being over is enough for someone who's had a rotten time. Mm-hmm. Same for myself, you know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. when that blessed day comes, you know, I don't need some sort of compensation mm-hmm. for the crappy time that I've had. You know, it's one of those of like, just get it finished. You know, that's mm-hmm. how I view those things.
Yeah, I would just say there are alternatives available.
Yeah, but if you look at the logistics, I mean, just if you ever want to think about heaven, certainly in the Christian way, then just Google how many people die a minute in the UK alone. Google that.
Yeah.
And then go, right, so St. Peter, we're led to believe, is welcoming or refusing entry on some occasion. He's doing a lot of admin anyway for all those souls that have passed. So you work out whether that's...
Maybe time works differently.
Plausible. Google it now. Pause this podcast and go Google the numbers.
Don't make other people's search histories match yours. It's weird enough already.
Well, there we go. There's your comments for this week. Let's go and find out what we're going to be chatting about for the 10 minutes we've got left of this episode. So what we're going to talk about, I think I'm in quite an obstinate mood today.
Right. Well, this is
most unlike me.
Yeah, you're normally just so mega chill, aren't you?
Yeah. So what are you going to tell us about today for me to be obstinate about?
Well, I thought...
I'll try not to be. I will try not to be, because that's not what this is about. But I think I'm just in that mood.
Well, that's okay.
I'm in quite a contrary, contentious mood.
Well, this will be fine. You'll agree wholeheartedly with this.
Put me in my place. That's your job. Put me in my place.
That's not my job.
Make it so that I can't argue.
No.
That's what... Do you know what? I crave that. Not from you personally. I crave that.
Yeah.
I crave someone giving me a good argument. Crave it.
Well, I'm not going to give it to you about esoteric things, am I?
Well, then we all must concede that it's all nonsense then.
It's not.
Just playing in a playground.
You know what? This is the story of my life at the minute. Yeah. It's not nonsense. I'm just tired.
Okay. Well, how about this? Well, I will lay down a challenge to the listener then. Mm. If you subscribe to esoteric views, if you believe in ghosts and all that sort of thing, make me like you.
Oh, God.
Because increasingly, and it's happened a lot recently, we don't have to go into any details again. We have gone into details somewhat on little deleted scenes on Patreon and things like that. But there's been even more of that. and more of that. And I have come to the conclusion, here's where I am at the moment, okay? And I don't aim this at people listening to this mm-hmm. who might be part of that community.
Mm-hmm.
I am asking you mm-hmm. to befriend me.
Yeah.
I am asking you to prove me wrong on this assessment. But my assessment is that this community, present company accepted, this community
mm-hmm.
is horrible.
Okay.
It's horrible, horrible, horrible people. And I'm the baddie.
Yes.
I'm the baddie
in
everyone's eyes.
Yeah, I feel like I should be going, they're not. Because you know it's, you know, not all ghost hunters.
I know you're not.
There are lots of lovely people out there, but certainly the experiences we've had over the last few months.
Yeah.
I would say tainted, but have certainly blackened both of our worldviews of people within the community.
So that's where I'm at in my life.
Yes.
I consider this community to be vile.
Yeah.
I really do. So I'm asking, in the spirit of friendship,
mm-hmm.
disprove it to me, not you, Kate, to people.
Yeah.
If you do believe in this, show me that it isn't all horrible people.
Yeah.
Who are constantly sniping at both each other and dissenting voices as well. People that don't believe in it. Because as I've said before, I am regularly accused
mm-hmm.
of being the villain.
Yes.
I'm regularly accused of being the bad guy
mm-hmm.
and the one, he'll do this, he'll twist everything around. However, I still maintain I've never done any of that. I've listened.
Yeah.
I've made jokes.
Yeah.
Sue me. But I've never been nasty.
Yeah.
But I have had it in the other direction.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen to you in the other direction as well.
Yeah.
So I'm asking that community, prove me wrong.
Yeah. I think that could be a nice thing.
Yeah.
I think if people take that as, we need to show him that the paranormal community is not completely toxic, then that would be a lovely thing.
But not, well, hang on. Not we need to show him as if I am, as if I am in charge.
No, as in not. Like... As in, like, you've had such a bad experience. I'm sad about it.
I'm not. I'm not sad about it, because all it has done, really,
mm-hmm.
is vindicate me,
mm-hmm.
is validate the things that I suspected were going on.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's just been like, Well, you call that, right, Ian?
This is my internal dialogue. Yeah, is that. It's sad. I'm not saying there aren't, you know, big poisonous pools within the paranormal, but there are some good people.
Okay.
So, good people.
I've only met one.
Yeah.
Thus far.
I'll make a few phone calls. We'll go out for tea. It'll be lovely.
Okay.
But this week, to keep you all nice and calm and happy...
It could be none by the end of this episode.
I thought we'd have a chat about psychometry.
Ah, very clever. Confuse me. Confuse me with big words that I don't know what they mean.
Well, it's fun because...
Is it?
No. It's something we can all try at home. It's like Blue Peter, but with ghosts.
For God's sake, don't write a cheque you can't cash. Don't say it's fun. We'll decide if it was fun at the end.
Okay.
But don't say up front, it's fun. What is it?
Right,
what's psychometry?
It's a form of ESP. So it's a form of extrasensory perception.
Right, okay.
Kind of the ability to hold an object or be near an object.
Right.
And be able to glean the history and kind of the stories of that object.
Okay.
So you can hold something and then you would know where it was from, who it was owned by, the history surrounding it.
Now, do you require, as in you, as in one who is doing this,
mm-hmm.
do they require the powers to be able to do it? Do they have to be blessed individuals who are able to do that? Or is this something that can happen to anyone?
Well, it depends who you ask.
I'm
but generally,
you.
With ESP nowadays,
yeah.
the general thought is that everyone has these innate powers within them. They just need
right.
to tap into them.
Okay. Right.
Whereas if you go into the 19th century, then you'll get people saying, no, they are psychometers that have these
right.
special powers.
Okay.
But it essentially involves holding an object.
Yeah.
And depending on the form of psychometry, you will be able to identify what it is, what people were around it at the time,
okay.
what significance it has. You see a lot of cases of psychometry used in kind of psychic detective instances and when
okay.
police forces have brought in psychics to help find missing persons.
This is in real life?
In
this?
Real life.
Yeah, okay.
In real life, when they've held an item of their clothing and they'll say, oh, she's hiding off the M1 services, you know.
As a relevant offshoot of that,
mm-hmm.
I know of that happening, as in I've heard about that happening.
Mm-hmm.
But is that something that anywhere in the world now
yes.
stock is put into? So is there... So look at Cracker as an example, the TV show Cracker with the late great Robbie
yeah.
Coltrane in it, right? So yeah. within that show,
mm-hmm.
there is a dispute within the police force about his validity.
Yes.
About whether... Should we be using
yeah.
this criminal psychologist?
Yes.
So somebody who is able to understand... What sort of person would have committed this crime,
mm-hmm.
which then supposedly helps the investigation of who they should be looking for?
Yes.
Now, that's obviously flawed in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
However, there might be something where percentages is worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a theme that runs through the show of Cracker, right? But I would presume that that is a theme that runs through whenever police forces use a criminal psychologist full stop.
Yes.
And they are real things. Cracker was based on a real criminal psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Is it happening now, in 2023, is it happening that police forces are using magicians?
Let's use the term wizards. Let's use the term psychics, even if you don't believe in their
yeah.
authenticity.
There was no need for that if. It is happening.
It is happening far more publicly.
Right.
In America
okay.
than in the UK,
yeah.
to my knowledge. Although
yeah.
a lot of high-profile TV psychics and mediums
yeah.
are still claiming that they've been called in by various police
yeah,
forces
okay. so, yeah.
on an unofficial basis.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about that. It is officially happening.
In America,
okay.
I've heard of several instances recently of people using psychics to help with cold cases, really.
Now, aren't there a million and one stories about people saying people are dead who aren't dead? Or
yes.
people are, you know, I mean...
Yeah.
The aforementioned Mr. Okora did it very famously. He pronounced someone dead who there was no actual evidence was
yeah.
dead. And it was quite... it was nearly career-ending for him,
yeah.
really. So...
Yeah, there's many, many instances of that. Particularly in the early 2000s, there was kind of this wave
yeah.
of mediums who would say, this person's dead, this person's here. And then they'd turn up and they'd just been
yeah.
poorly.
Would there be repercussions on that?
See, I don't know. I think if in the UK someone had been brought in on an unofficial advisory basis,
yeah.
there's no legal route that any force can take after that.
No, but it's who do you blame in that situation?
Yeah.
So do you blame the person who's made the pronouncements of where so-and-so is, or if they're around and all that sort of thing? Or is the blame lying with the copper
who has
said, right, we are doing this?
Yeah, but I think with the medium, as we've seen in so many different instances, they can always come back and say, well, I'm only just working on the information I could glean.
Yeah, well, there's the very famous case in the Yorkshire Ripper case, which was where there was a hoax caller.
Yes, yeah.
And the detective in charge. I'm always reluctant to use their names in this because I have this weird empathetic thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the detective in charge, there were several detectives in charge at various times, but mm-hmm. one of them was convinced
that
the hoax caller was the killer.
And so they were looking for a guy from Sunderland.
The accident was what it was being based on. So, and it was tragic. That was a tragic repercussions from that. And there is a lot more to the story than that. You know,
yes.
That's quite a simplified version of events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you actually consider what was actually going on within that investigation, blah, 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 blah. But who's responsible? So are we pointing the finger at that chief superintendent,
mm-hmm.
or are we pointing the finger at the person that made the hoax call?
Yeah.
So who do we hold responsible in those situations?
I don't think it's either or.
That person was eventually found, by the way. It took many years, but that person was eventually found.
Yeah.
Long after the actual killer was arrested and things. Mm-hmm. But I find that interesting when we talk about police involvement with psychics and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Who are we holding accountable for that? The police that let him in the door, or the person that put themselves forward, you presume knowing full well that they were making it up.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think when we put psychometry into kind of the space of law enforcement, like I say, there are so many different factors in that. Like, when you bring any kind of esoteric ability, inverted commas, into a space where there would be real-world ramifications. So that would fall into the whole sort of ethical side of the paranormal.
Well, when Derek Okora was asked about... I appreciate I'm not saying names, but I find it a bit yucky to say names.
Yes. Yeah,
about who it was about and all that sort of thing. I don't like the mediaification of victims and murderers.
Yes.
I don't like that. So Derek Okora, who we spoke about, was asked about a high-profile case where somebody had gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
He made a statement, which we don't... To this day, we don't know whether that was true or not. We don't know.
Yeah.
But... He made a definitive statement,
yes.
right, about the victim, that person was no longer alive, is the statement he made. That may be the case, but we don't know that for definite.
Mm-hmm.
I feel quite strongly that when Derek Okora was asked that question, he should have said, I'm not touching that.
Same. I think this...
I am simply...
Yeah.
I'm not even going to give you anything you can quote me on. I am not touching that.
Yeah. I think this
shouldn't
is where,
have even said that. Should have just shook his head.
Yeah, where ethical guidelines really need to be
enforced. Yeah,
But taking psychometry into slightly more fluffier fields.
Okay.
And this is when we can get into...
Thank you.
fun.
I hold my hands up. That is my fault. I did bring those things up.
If we take psychometry...
The Yorkshire Ripper. brought up.
Well, I'm saying this is something you can do at home. That's really light.
Okay.
Well, if we take psychometry... Back to its roots, which unsurprisingly are in the 19th century, kind of, you know, when the big wave of psychical research and spiritualism was really rising up. Psychometry, well, the term itself was coined by a man called Joseph Rhodes Buchanan, kind of defined what it was. But then one of the more definitive books on psychometry is called The Soul of Things by William Denton.
Right.
And it's bizarre... What a surprisingly good read.
To someone like you.
Yeah, to me. It's available online for free. Read it yourself. Oh, interaction. It's so lovely. So basically...
I'm going to stick with Boundless Realm, Cultural Perspectives on the Haunted Mansion. That's as close as you'll get me to those books.
But within these kind of early texts about psychometry, they focus a lot on fossils and using fossils as kind of a means of like psychic time travel.
Oh my god.
So
you're going to talk about dinosaur ghosts, aren't you?
Yes!
Oh my god. Is this because someone ask recently about why there are no dinosaur ghosts?
I'm not petty.
Have you literally gone away and done a deep dive research?
I've written a paper on it.
In some stupid book.
I've lost like a fortnight of my life to it.
Pseudo scientist has scribbled on the back of a fag packet. You've been and bought it for 80 quid, and here's why dinosaur ghosts are real.
Look, it's a valid academic interest.
Didn't I tell you what a bad mood I was in? I told you that, and you thought, I know what a winning round.
That everyone dinosaur likes ghosts. Come on, everyone likes dinosaurs.
Okay, I'm listening.
Right, so within William Denton's soul of things,
yeah,
he also believed that people had more like raised powers of perception than others. And luckily for him, these people included like his wife, his sister and his son.
Yeah,
so,
payroll.
Yeah, it's like nepotism within the paranormal.
Yeah, yeah.
So he did a lot of tests, inverted commas, because in this period, scientific reasoning within the world of paranormal tests was kind of on holiday.
Okay.
At the time, didn't exist. But there were some really interesting tests where he'd bring bits of fossils, of fossilised wood, and these have kind of been extrapolated on over the years. So psychometers, people with the ability of psychometry,
yeah,
would hold these fossils or just pieces of like an ancient riverbed,
yeah,
and would be transported,
yeah,
depending on their level of skill, back to, you know, the Cretaceous or the Jurassic period,
right,
and could describe their surroundings.
Well, then they're not ghosts, are they? Then they are essentially,
it's kind of this liminal
psychically
space,
time traveling to go and look at, observe,
yeah,
not interact.
But could in some instances, they could interact.
Of course,
this kind of
this is the problem, isn't it? So this will always be the problem.
Yes.
Science. I'm going to make a big statement here. This is something I personally feel.
Okay.
Science is a brilliant thing. Right. That's what I think.
Okay.
It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing for someone such as myself. It was of a skeptical nature.
Mm-hmm.
Because science will almost certainly defeat every argument of paranormal claims, right? Almost
yes,
certainly.
Okay.
It's also very handy to the esoteric community as well, particularly when you say something science, but you have just made it up. And if you could call it psychometry, a word that doesn't exist within real science, make it sound like it is a real science.
But at the
and
time,
then just apply your own rules to it.
But at the time, this was
imagine
a period.
Imagine if Ohm did that.
Period where a lot of sciences that have been seen as credible since were being developed. So you'll get a lot of pseudoscience being developed alongside science. And there was a great belief that things like psychometry could be the thing that brought together psychology and geology. There was this need almost to kind of bridge gaps constantly with this spiritual catalyst.
Yeah, but it's another hill that I'll die on. You can't just make up science to suit your statement.
I get that, but in the
19th
century,
they do all the time. That's what the gizmos are, that walking around with ghost hunting machines and things. It's just making up science.
Well, they can measure something, and then that something can be reapplied to different kinds of
science
and belief systems.
They're making up science.
Oh, dinosaurs, come back here, come back. So, okay, here's an instance.
Yeah.
Okay, a psychometer was presented with a bit of wood from a creek in Henderson County in Texas.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so this was placed into these experimental conditions, and the psychometer...
Don't just skate past that.
I said experimental, not scientific.
Yeah, no, okay, that's fine. But what were the conditions?
I presume sitting in a room with them and saying, what do you see?
Okay.
So bearing in mind, this was a time where there were great discoveries being made. Egyptology was huge.
Yeah.
Tales of time travel were huge. It was a very exciting period.
Okay.
So, the psychometer held this piece of wood.
The what, sorry?
The psychometer.
Now,
That's the name applied to the person with these purported powers.
But where... So, bit by bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, why were they blessed with that title? Like, where did this start?
I think this is a title that William Denton, amateur geologist, bit of a showman...
Yeah. Gave to anyone.
Placed upon people that he believed had this extrasensory ability...
Right.
Of being able to hold things.
But how far back does that go, though? Is he just on the street going, will you do this experiment? Yeah, okay, well then you are now a psychometer.
It started with his family. So he would test his family
and
those that could do it.
Okay.
He would call them psychometers. He was kind of coining words as he went along.
Yeah, yeah. Making up science.
So the psychometer holding this piece of wood would then be able to, you know, see, hear, interact, smell, depending on who they were and what their abilities were with this environment, with the roots of it. And this person saw big quantities of driftwood in a stream.
Right.
Now, I've noted this down because this is a very exciting time travel, ghosty period.
Okay.
And she said, what monsters? large spotted lizards like crocodiles, some in the water and others crawling on the soft mud. One I see with a short and broad mouth. At the connection of its legs with a body is a wing-like extension of its skin. It seems well suited for the water, but is clumsy on land. What monstrous reptiles.
Right.
So they would provide very detailed descriptions of dinosaurs.
And when are you going to tell us about them?
But again, based on very little knowledge of what dinosaurs were around at certain periods, and realistically what time period that bit of driftwood came from.
Yeah, because this is where we are on totally different ships here.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see it as like, and they didn't know, very little knowledge about it. Yeah, that's why they're not saying what they're called. That's why.
Oh, I know.
Because they don't know anything about dinosaurs.
Yes.
But they know there is a thing called dinosaurs. And the only one they can think of is Stegosaurus, maybe Tyrannosaurus Rex, possibly Triceratops, maybe Diplodocus. But that's as far as they're
going
to go on
this, they're going
right?
with monstrous lizards.
Yeah, right. Because... Go on.
So I'm saying that there are massive...
The reason there was a jump there, the reason I just stopped talking is because of the glare that I just got.
Look, there were massive inconsistencies with this, obviously, because people were talking about science that was being developed and discovered at this time period. So discoveries that they weren't on the brink of themselves.
So how well known were dinosaurs at this period?
It was kind of in... There was a lot of dinosaur hype and fossil hype at the time. But they weren't as well known then as they are today.
Okay.
And so outside...
Is that definitely true?
Well, I think so, judging by the timeline of science.
Not do you think so. Is that definitely true?
Dinosaurs are more universally accepted as a legitimate thing today than in the 19th century.
Even that's a contentious comment,
isn't it? Excluding kind of fundamentalist creationists.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, excluding those. So after we got the dinosaur business and all the excitement... published, then people started taking psychometry on the road and onto the stage.
Right.
And then that's what we get to today with people holding objects and being able to supposedly tell us more about that.
So this is like really low level, this, isn't it? Because even an auditorium psychic going out, they've got to have some sort of hit rate. You know, within the room in that group of people who've been foolish enough to pay for a ticket, they've got to have some moments people going, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right, yeah, that is my granddad. Yeah. They've got to have that.
Yeah, of course.
In this scenario, the audience is passive. It's like, bring us that, give it here. Yeah, yeah, I can see a big monster.
But I think interestingly...
Thank you very much, good night. Thank you.
When we look at kind of how mediumship and esoterotic things from the 19th century were kind of huge and very performative, you know, when we had ghosts walking around seance rooms and eels being delivered from heaven, things like that.
Yeah.
And over the years, the wildness of that has really dulled down and has got very domestic.
Right.
So today, like psychometry today, would be, like you say, giving a button off your granddad's shirt, someone holding it and saying, oh yes, this is definitely from our Sydney. And it would be far less, yes, I'm holding this fossil and I can see I'm about to be attacked by a dinosaur.
So it's made into a personal thing, so it would be about audience members. It would be the same kind of thing, but with an added prop.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, a lot of it today is obviously dismissed and kind of debunked to an extent by looking into, like with the Cracker episode, with basic deduction skills, cold reading and confirmation bias.
Mm.
Because again, if you're interacting with someone, if you're saying, okay, well, I'm getting a man, then you'll get nods. It'll be picking up and reading on these sort of things. But there are some really interesting instances of useful psychometry, like finding your car keys, of being able to focus and imagine what they felt like in your hand. And through this kind of psychic focus, you're able to find them.
Right.
That would be seen as psychometry. But back in 2003, there was a TV series on, I think it was on Living, called Jane Goldman Investigates.
Okay.
Jane Goldman is an amazing screenwriter and
phenomenally
talented. And she did this series where she would try and learn these different sort of psychic skills and look into a different topic each week. And one week she did do psychometry.
Right.
Turns out she's a natural. So Jane Goldman
is
a psychometer.
Yeah.
So the woman that was going to teach her psychometry, let's call her Jenny.
Right.
Because that's her name.
Okay.
held this piece of, it did just look like concrete.
Okay.
And she said that she was sensing annoyance. She was sensing machinery, pulling. There was a lot of this sort of mechanical stuff. And then she said, I'm getting people sat beside it, eating bread and cheese.
Right.
And then, because she said all of that, that was seen as a accurate confirmation that she understood that this was a piece of the Berlin Wall.
Right.
So that's kind of psychometry as it is.
I mean, I know I don't need to say these things, but I still want to say these things.
Okay.
So if you've got a clump of wall,
yeah,
it's a fair bet it's been knocked down.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. That is a fair bet.
And the person who knocked it down wasn't lactose intolerant.
Well, no, I don't know about the bread and cheese thing, but mm-hmm. I can say that the machinery aspect of it,
yes,
is logical.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I didn't need to say that, but I had to.
It's okay. So, basically, what you see in a lot of psychic fairs and in a lot of, like, performance mediums today, when they hold an item from the dearly departed...
Yeah.
That is psychometry, and that's rich tradition of dinosaurs.
Yeah,
ghosts.
And being given a button.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, this is from something, isn't it?
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, and there's a lot of loopholes that you can exploit.
Yeah.
When reading, especially clothing, like psychometrically. Don't know if that's a word, but it makes sense in my mind.
Well, none of the other ones were.
But like if you're trying to read a jacket.
Yeah.
And you missed an important fact that this person...
I can't believe that this podcast has come to the point where you can say the sentence, if you are trying to read a jacket and no one bats an eyelid.
And you know, you're not getting a massive life event. You know, you're not getting that this man was obsessed with cannons and died while drowning in a vat of custard.
Right.
But you get that he loved his children.
Yeah.
Or he was really cold.
Yeah.
You can always say, well, I wouldn't have got the custard thing because I can only read what he was feeling when he last wore this.
Yeah.
I don't get, you know, the full library of emotions.
So
they stop at a certain
point. So it's safer, isn't it, to just say, I can see a dinosaur.
Yeah. So, yeah, to everyone at home listening, next time you pass a fossil shop, pick one up.
Yeah.
And see if you can transport back in time.
The question I ask you a lot,
yeah.
And I'll ask you again now, what are your thoughts? What's Dr. Dr. Kate Cheryl, what are your academic thoughts on this?
I think it's brilliant.
Now, that just occurred to me then. That's
okay.
A quandary for you, isn't it? Because you're academically validated.
Well.
But you're a doctor.
Yes.
Do you have to, when you talk about all this nonsense,
mm-hmm.
do you have to make assessments... yourself, mm-hmm. inside your own head,
yeah.
about what to either admit to believing
mm-hmm.
or what to pretend to believe in. Or what, you know, what, however it works. Like, what do you have to make case-by-case assessments on this?
I would say so. And I wouldn't say that I'm untruthful with any of the...
No. Sorry, that was me being obstinate and contrary.
Yeah.
What I mean is do you feel a weight of pressure with mm-hmm. your doctorate title?
Mm-hmm.
That you've got to check and double check. What?
Yes. Well, I think admitting to believing in anything kind of left field and esoteric or spiritual kind of feels like it goes against what academic credentials I should be moving towards, I should be seeking.
So when I ask you about, as I'm going to ask you now, about mm-hmm. what your take is on psychometry,
yeah,
that famous science,
yes,
are you negotiating in your own head at that point going, mm-hmm. well, what should I say?
To a point, yeah, because I think with a lot of these esoteric fields, when they've been, sorry, esoterotic fields, my mistake, I'm really interested in the history of things, where these beliefs started. And then when I track them down to modern day and see how they've developed or how they've simplified, I kind of end up making this kind of cut-off point.
Right.
In my head. So I would, like, on simplest terms, say... you probably can't see dinosaurs.
Right.
I'd love it if you could. And I'm going to keep doing research into this.
Hey, I'd love it if you could. I'd love it if there were ghosts in old spooky houses. I'd love that.
See, I do believe there are ghosts.
I would love that.
I've seen ghosts in modern spooky houses.
Anyway.
Right, but it's when we get to that cutoff point where there's still a bit of me that goes, there might be something in this.
Right, okay.
And that's with the modern holding objects and being able to know... a little bit more about them than they should know. Not just confirmation bias, this is from a jacket, this is from, your granddad. You had a granddad, didn't he? As he passed, you know. I do think maybe there's something in that.
Yeah.
Because I've met psychics and mediums that I do believe
okay.
are good and have tapped into things that have really astounded me.
I've got a question. Okay. It's really important.
Yeah.
Your house is full of tat.
Antiques.
Right, from...
Curio.
From dead people, right?
Predominantly.
Right. So, when you read this book, yes. I've already forgot the name of it.
The Soul of Things.
The Soul of Things.
Good title.
And you read about people holding stuff and seeing things and
yes.
all that business.
Yeah.
Were you either tempted or did you actually grab an hold of some of your dead people things? Yeah. And by, I mean, in terms of people you didn't know, not family heirlooms and things, I mean...
Like, oh, it's granny. Yeah, it's a picture.
Have you done that? Have you actually got hold of it?
I have years ago because I collect mourning jewellery.
Yeah.
I have done for years and years and years.
MOURN.
Now. Yes. Yeah, not just little sunshine brooches. No. Like, I've been collecting that since I was a teenager. And I was thinking that I have handled over the years hundreds and hundreds of pieces of mourning jewellery, both like in my collection when I've gone on research visits and museums and things. And never once have I held one. And thought, oh my God, I know this was owned by so-and-so. Of all the superpowers in the world, I would love to have that. The ability to hold something, an antique, and know its story.
Well, it'd save you a ton of research time.
Oh my God, it would be amazing. I'd be the most productive woman in England.
But have you ever tried to, is what I'm asking you.
I've held so many of them, thinking, anything,
what
please,
are you?
Anything.
Tell me your story.
Yeah.
I am listening. Tell me your story.
Yeah, and I think maybe...
I am from the future.
There's only one instance where a brooch gave me the heebie-jeebies, but it doesn't now.
I don't even know what that means. what happened?
It was one of my first brooches, and so I put that down to me being a little bit wired to spookiness at the time. Because mourning brooches
was
were
it
to
that
do with
every
death.
Time you wore it, you felt a pain in your heart?
Was it because I'd stabbed it into my chest? I've done that so many times, and I'm more worried about tetanus, to be honest.
I dare say. What did happen?
I got really spooked out by this one brooch, and I ended up keeping it in a different room for like 2 years.
Yeah.
But thus far, no ghosts and no vision into the 19th century, sadly, but, you know, I keep trying.
Biding its time until you least expect it. You're going to wake up one day with that brooch, it's going to have its andron in it.
So that was Loopholes, the psychometry special.
It'll be glaring into your eyes as it squeezes the last bit of life out of you.
So if
and
you...
And laughing in that way that only brooches can.
So if you do manage to transport yourself into the past...
You'll hear it.
Please.
You'll be in bed and you'll hear. That's how they walk. They do it so it's pin, drag, pin, drag...
Oh, please, please don't let that get in my head. It really freaked me out for years. Right, so, if you manage to grip a fossil and travel into the past, get in touch.
Not a euphemism.
You can find us and like us and interact on Facebook at Loopholes Podcast, on Instagram at Loopholes Pod, on Twitter at Loopholes Pod, and you can even send us an email at loopholespodcast@gmail.com. And you can join and chat on either of our Patreon sites, preforably both. Patreon.com/IanBaldsworth and Patreon.com/burialsandbeyond for me. Thanks for listening. I've been Kate Cheryl.
I have been Ian Baldsworth. Gentle Ian Baldsworth, as I've been in this episode.
I will see you next week. Bye.
Goodbye. Oh, it's back.
No.
Pin. Drag. Pin. Drag. It's getting closer.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Baldsworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Baldsworth.